Hey, welcome back to Corinth in Your Car. I'm Josh, and I am here with Luke today. Adam is out, so we're missing him. But, man, we're excited. It's Christmas, and we're excited. Well, it's the Christmas season.
We're excited. That happened really fast.
We're excited you're with us here for another episode of Corinth in Your Car. As always, we're just grateful to be here and to have you with us. So, Luke, let's do a little check-in. How you doing this week?
I'm good, man. It's been a pretty normal week as far as just the rhythms and routines go. Apart from Tristan kind of being out in Claremont, Georgia, doing some clinical stuff for PT school. So we're kind of entering into a new season where it's going to be for her home on the weekends and kind of away during the week. So that is for sure different. But other than that, super great.
Good.
That is going well. I learned very quickly that Tristan is the sole reason that I do not go home and immediately fall asleep on the couch every night. Because that's what I've been doing. I'll flip on a Monday night football game or something like that. And it's like, oh, it's the second quarter already. I'm gonna watch the second quarter.
That happened quickly.
It's halftime. How did that happen? You know, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, everything's good, man. I got no complaints.
That's good.
For you, I'm gonna ask you so that you don't have to volunteer your own information.
Yeah. No, I'm doing good. I'm grateful that it's December. My daughter Naya is turning 9. Actually, so the day this comes out, it's her birthday, Monday. So that's fun. And so we're looking forward to that, a couple days away from it now. And she has requested biscuits and gravy.
Oh, yes.
For dinner.
For dinner.
For dinner, yeah. So
right, I'll be there. It's fantastic.
Come on, man. Yeah, we eat at 5 usually, so we eat early, but it's good. Yeah, so biscuits and gravy. Yeah, it's been a good week. You know, last week we wrapped up the Unhurried, Becoming Unhurried series. Mm-hmm. And so just another part that was kind of a positive of my week, we got some good feedback from the message last week and then also just the series as a whole. And so for everybody listening, just wanted to say thank you and tell a couple quick stories about how people are becoming unhurried and doing some of the things that we had talked about the past 4 weeks, and just encourage you to continue to do those things in this busy Christmas season. So one of them was from a woman, and she emailed me and said, hey, today I'm specifically going to wait in a long line. And so I encouraged her, said, yeah, way to go. And then so she texted me later and said, talk about a long line. It was 17 people at the UPS store, which—
That's a lot of people.
A lot of people. And, you know, you think about that, you think, man, that's just a recipe for disaster, for complaint. But her perspective was, hey, I'm going to be unhurried and I'm not going to be impatient. And so her perspective caused her to see the efficiency of the workers and how they were doing a good job, even in the midst of kind of a lot going on. Tons of people returning Amazon packages this time of year. And
yeah, no doubt.
Then later that day, she specifically said, I also took the long way to pick up my grandson from school. And I listened to a whole Corinth in the Car podcast. So it's not necessarily a plug. It's just what she said to encourage us, and said, it was great. It was really fun listening to your dad as well. And said she was looking forward to the hour ride home as well. Just unhurried time with her grandson in the car talking. So that was really cool. Really good encouragement. The other one was a story from a man who said, man, I was really challenged by the challenge for our fathers to put their phone in the drawer when they get home.
Oh, yeah.
He said, I'm going to do that. I'm going to be intentional, spend time, do something with every single member of my family before I look at my phone again when I get home. So anyway, good job. We'd love to hear other stories too.
Oh, absolutely.
In general, for not just the Unhurried series, but if anything is helpful, or if we get something wrong, fact check us on the podcast and stuff too. It's fun. The more interaction we can have, the better. So anyway, that's good. It's a crazy—
Love those stories. Thanks for sharing that. It's encouraging to see how it's playing out for people and how it's blessing them. So again, I'll say it just as Josh said it. If you've got stories, share it with us. It encourages us a lot.
Absolutely. Man, it's crazy. We mentioned it a while ago. Crazy that it's December already. mixed with some fun stuff, you know, good music and also some not so good music, right? We talked about that yesterday.
No kidding.
At Corinth.
Yes.
Ask you, our audience at church, to share the worst
song or least favorite Christmas song.
Yeah. And then just the fill in the blank. This song is the worst.
Yeah.
We all have our opinions. And I think you shared yours yesterday, right?
Yes.
Sunday?
Yes.
Sunday?
I shared mine. And here's the thing is at this point in the 10-year of podcasting, those of you who have been listening for a while would not be surprised for me to have some dramatic opinions about Christmas music. So there is a long list of songs that that I have problems with. But the most annoying, so I'm going to just go with this, the most annoying song.
Yeah, that's good.
Is simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
It seems oxymoronic, right?
Every time I hear that song, it makes me simply not want to have a wonderful Christmas time. It makes me want to leave wherever it's playing. And man, like, it is all over the place. They play that on the speakers of every place that you seem to go to. It's like it follows you. It's like, no, leave me alone. I don't want to listen.
Yeah, and we're talking about, that's Paul McCartney, right?
So I think so.
For all the good things, all the good music he put out, it's like, really, Paul? Like, were you just trying to make another buck? But anyway, my one of my least favorites is I'm the Happiest Christmas Tree. Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho,
he, he. Yeah. So, man, sorry if you have that earworm in your ear now. But
I'm telling you, man, it's not been, like, Thanksgiving was over, and it wasn't even, like, probably 3 days before. Just naturally, I didn't even pursue Christmas music to listen to it, but just naturally, all of the Christmas songs have been stuck in my head.
Oh yeah,
like all of the time, and you know, I don't know. Christmas music's great, some of it, but some of it, ooh.
Yeah, I like Christmas music. One of my favorite albums is actually the Johnny Swim group. Johnny Swim, husband and wife, they did a Christmas album. That's a lot of fun.
I like Lauren Daigle's.
Her stuff's good too.
Reliant K. Has
a throwback.
An incredible Christmas album if you liked punk rock when you were in middle school, like I did. Trying to think of I made a Christmas playlist for the teen room a couple years back, and I was trying to put some Christmas music on it that was like kind of unique and interesting songs that maybe people didn't really hear or all that sort of stuff. So first Wednesday night after Thanksgiving, it's like we usually whenever we put the Christmas music on in the teen room, and I put the Spotify playlist on, and the first song that came on the playlist was a Christmas song by Run DMC.
Ooh.
And there you go. You can just imagine. You can imagine what that was like. But it was not simply having a wonderful Christmas time. That did not make that playlist, nor should it make any playlist for the rest of the existence of the world.
That's right. Well, Tristan and you are celebrating, I guess, your second Christmas together this year as a married couple.
Yeah, so
you've only had, you know, 1 year to establish some traditions, but just thought it'd be fun. Do you have any fun traditions, Christmas stuff that already you've kind of gotten into?
Yeah, we've got a few. Now, so our first married Christmas was a little bit different than we had planned. We were gonna do Christmas with her family in the morning and then fly out to San Antonio later that evening to be with my
family. Right?
On Christmas Day, we were gonna fly.
I've flown on Christmas Day before. It's actually nice.
It's cheaper.
And people are nice. All the flight attendants are nice, it's great.
Yeah,
actually.
So we were gonna do that. But then I woke up on Christmas morning and had a significant fever, ended up getting COVID. And so we spent our first Christmas at home together, which was kind of a blessing. It was a lot of fun.
Kind of cool, yeah.
It was fun. But
you got to rework the flights, right? Eventually.
We got to rework the flights.
Didn't lose the money.
We used some credits to visit home not too long ago, and so it wasn't the end of the world that we missed the flight. But yeah, it was different for sure. Now, so I'm going to just go ahead and say I don't want that to be our tradition. So that is not the ideal tradition. We've done some other stuff even back to whenever we were dating. I remember one of the things we do and did again this year is like kind of around the time the Christmas trees go up, we go to Hobby Lobby or Walmart or Target or something like that, and we shop separately at the same time for an ornament for the other person.
Oh, cool.
And
yeah.
We
That's fun.
Go through a different checkout line,
yeah.
Buy it, and then when we get to the car, give it to each other.
That's
Don't
fun.
Even wrap it up or anything
okay.
like that.
Yeah.
Just go shop together for that, which has been kind of fun. Other than that, we haven't really established a lot, unless I'm not remembering some, which if I'm not remembering some and Tristan listens to this later, then
she can correct you, yeah.
In trouble, or, you know, she'll correct me and all that. But I do know, so one of my favorite Christmas traditions, was, December 23rd. Growing
okay.
up, December 23rd was a night where our family gathered together, cousins, all that sort of stuff, because it was my cousin's birthday. So we did 23rd, 24th, and 25th together as
wow.
a whole family, which was a lot. But it was always tradition on December 23rd, we were going to go see a movie. And so that's what we did.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what we did last year. We went to see Spider-Man.
Okay.
Which was an incredible movie. And then we woke up with COVID on Christmas Day. So may have been the theater, you know,
yeah,
you never
yeah.
know. But hopefully that is a tradition that will continue. I love going to the movie theater to see some movies. So
yeah, hopefully some good ones come out. I don't know. I haven't looked.
Yeah, so, I'm anyway. out of the movie world right now. I haven't looked to see what's in. But I still haven't seen Black Panther, the new
okay.
one. So
yeah.
that'll probably be the
An
next
option.
Movie I see
yeah.
in theaters. So
I know something we've gotten into the past couple of years is actually leaning into the Advent a little bit more and doing some meals. And so we had our first one last Sunday. And so by the time this comes out, we'll have our second one. And we do the whole thing, do the candles and
Great.
Turn off all the lights except the one candle. And of course, you know, that's symbolic of Jesus, the light of the world coming in. And so it's really fun. Each week there's four candles. And so by the fourth week, with four candles lit, there's actually quite a bit of light, and it's just this reminder of the more Jesus you have, you know, the better you can see, and it's really fun.
Yeah.
It slows us down. Really, really, really good stuff. So that's been fun. That's one of our traditions.
Are you like eating very specific, intentional things, or are you just kind of doing whatever?
We're just doing like a nice meal, so it's not. Yeah. It's not like a Passover meal or
yeah,
a,
that's what I was wondering.
Know, Seder
like, yeah.
or something where everything's symbolic. It's just, it's a nice meal. We eat off the good plates.
Yeah.
We put candles up, you know, and just enjoy a slow meal. There's
yeah.
no time limit on it.
That's
so.
Cool. I know you guys have done the Passover meal before, kind of around that holiday season.
Yeah, we've done different versions of it. Sasha teaches at school and does a little bit of it. I remember years ago with youth group, we did some, and we've done some stuff as a family as well. So. Yeah, it's fun. Meals are incredible opportunities to do that. So,
yeah.
Hey, Christmas is also a time where you kind of create wish lists. And
yeah.
I'm not sure if you got one on Amazon this year or growing up, if you had one. Do you remember a specific wish list item you got growing up?
Yeah, the first one that always pops into my mind to mention, you know, my middle school punk rock phase. There was a time in my life where I really, really, really wanted to get into skateboarding.
Are these where the Heelys came in?
No. This isn't where the Heelys came in. Those were at a different point. I think the Heelys were a birthday present, not a Christmas present. So,
you wanted a skateboard.
I wanted a skateboard, okay. And I was like so sure that that wasn't ever going to happen because my mom didn't like the idea of skateboarding. She was like, it's dangerous. You're going to hurt yourself. You're not coordinated, Luke, so you're probably going to fall a lot, all that sort of stuff. And so I was just like.
And you're tall, so it's a long fall.
What I really wanted was a skateboard and a skateboard ramp, like a mm-hmm. ramp that I could figure out how to, you know, go up and you know, skate down, all that sort of stuff. And woke up Christmas morning, rushed into the room, as kids do, and right there in the middle of the room was a skateboard ramp and a skateboard. And
awesome.
And an excessive amount of protection.
Yeah.
So like a really intense helmet, elbow pads, wrist pads, knee pads. I felt like I was going to war every time I, you know, suited
Probably took
up
you to longer
wear my skateboard.
To put the pads on than the time you actually spent
yeah,
skateboarding.
No doubt. So it was kind of that thing, that rule where, hey, if you go skateboard, you got to wear all these pads. I was like, well, that's not even the point of skateboarding. Like the point of skateboarding is to look cool.
Was Tony Hawk a big deal when you were doing that?
Tony Hawk was. And one of our favorite video games of
Pro
all time
Skater.
Was the yeah. Tony Hawk video game.
He's still, I think, probably the best, right?
He's probably, I have no idea because I don't actually watch a lot
of skateboarding.
He's
the only skateboarder
right
that I know.
He probably is not the best currently, but
well, not
he
currently,
is
but great, I think he's
greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Greatest of all time, for sure, with the Indy 900.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I guess not the Indy 900. That'd be a NASCAR race.
Yes. Right?
It's the 900. He pulled a 900 spin off
of
the ramp.
Oh, my.
That's a lot of turns.
Like 2.5.
Yeah.
Something, anyway,
yeah,
something
incredible.
Like that.
So, anyways, I was putting, had to put on all those pads, felt silly. I went through the phase for about a couple of months, never actually learned how to skateboard and got frustrated that I couldn't do it. And then the ramp actually became a centerpiece for my bedroom. And every time my mom asked me to clean our bedroom, I just took all of the stuff off the floor and stuffed it underneath the ramp.
Ooh.
So it had its use, but it wasn't what its original use was for. So that's one that sticks out as a wish list item for sure.
Yeah, growing up, I think it was probably middle school for me too, is when the Nintendo 64 was coming out.
Oh, yes.
So I remember specifically that was my parents gave it to me as a scavenger hunt. So there wasn't actually a box under the tree, so I didn't have any idea. And I went on a scavenger hunt all throughout the house, 4 or 5 different locations, and then finally found it in like the attic closet or something, which was not what you think of as an attic. There was some access from my bedroom, actually, because it was the upstairs, and so it wasn't hard to get into. But I was super, super pumped, played World Cup 98 on that, won the World Cup so many times.
There you go.
Alan Shearer and England.
Nice.
They were really good, as they are again this year.
Yeah,
but,
they are.
One of our hopes and wish lists is by the time this comes out that the USA, having
not
tied
on their way home.
That's right. Having tied England, will have beaten, hopefully, the Dutch on Saturday. We'll be watching that, I'm sure. But anyway, all that wish list and want and hope really just leads us into kind of the conversation from today. The sermon that Adam preached began a series called All I Want for Christmas. And so we're thinking of the song.
You, baby.
Yeah, either that, like Mariah Carey, or My Two Front Teeth.
Hippopotamus. And,
yeah, all the things we want. I want a hippopotamus, so sorry for that. Getting it stuck in your head, too?
Yep.
Hey, fun fact, Rosalie, my other daughter, is missing her 2 front teeth. So
okay, there you go.
She wants her 2 front teeth, I guess. Maybe. She wants a lot of things. But
you could have some fun with that, you know.
Yeah.
You could find something to wrap up, like a couple of 2 front teeth, and just wrap it up and give it to her.
There you go.
That might not go well.
But the sermon... it kind of began this series, All I Want for Christmas, and I'll just recap it real quick, and then we'll jump into just kind of some reactions and how we can, like we always do, just put some legs on the message. So All I Want for Christmas, as kids, you know, we made wish lists. We all did it, and really, we still do, probably. We have these things that we want, but underneath those lists or desires are really the things that we really want. And so we're going through the season of Advent, and we looked at hope, you know, this first week of the series. We really want hope. Like we say we want, you know, things on our list, our wish list, but we really want hope. Luke 2, we looked at two characters, Simeon and Anna. Both had been waiting for a long time. Their hopes were fulfilled in Jesus. And so, you know, we want to be like Simeon and Anna, filled with hope, which is different than optimism. Optimism is positive thinking. Hope is passionate trusting. Optimism is psychological. And I love this. Hope is theological.
Yeah.
It's based on who God is and what he has done. Hope is confidence in God himself. And so we looked at a couple practical ways to live with hope. The first was just the concept of looking forward by looking backward and remembering what God has done. And the second is just this idea of kind of releasing control. Just kind of giving it to God, embracing the season of waiting and seeing what God would do in our lives. So that's kind of where we went with the sermon, where Adam went, kicking off this series. So I'll quit talking now and just ask you kind of what was particularly maybe helpful, challenging, insightful for you.
Yeah, I think many, many things stick out to me. First thing is I love the characters of Simeon and Anna and I think because it's kind of at the tail end of the, you know, romantic birth narrative of Jesus, that they kind of get often overlooked and they're a little underrated.
Yeah, for sure they do.
But two, like seriously, two of my favorite characters from the entire Christmas story, Simeon and Annie and Anna. And just really, really encouraged by what the text says about this. I was just reading the section about Anna before we started, and man, something stuck out to me huge. And it was, so it's, Luke is just kind of giving a description of her, daughter of Phanuel, tribe of Asher, and she was very old. So
she was.
I don't know. Luke never learned that you're not supposed to say that about women, I guess. But he's you know talking about this. She was very old, and then he gives some more clues to kind of her situation. He said her husband died when they had been married only 7 years. So yeah. Put yourself in the in the context of what marriage looked like then. Mm-hmm. More often than not, women were married very young.
Yeah.
Right? So you're talking about by the time she's at, you know, at most 25,
sure,
being a widow.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very old now.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that ever since that happened, she spent time in the temple day and night worshiping God with fasting and prayer. You are talking about a woman who for, I mean, I'll just guess, over 50 years.
Well, yeah, it says like, there's a little bit of, you know, either she was 84 or she had been a widow for 84 years.
Yeah. See, there you go. So, boom.
So, either way, whether she's 84 or had been widowed for 84 years.
Like that is...
That's a long time.
That's more than your age and my age combined.
Like, yeah.
You know, and every moment in the temple, worshiping, fasting, and to be able to, I don't know, in some sense be rewarded with the actual ability to see the Messiah that she'd been waiting for. Oh man, such an inspiring story of actively worshiping and hoping for something. So anyways, just love those two characters. Love those two characters a bunch. I think this idea of hope, incredibly relevant and practical for us. I've been spending some time kind of in the last couple of weeks asking a lot of people, just as the Christmas season approaches, the question is how can I be praying for you?
Mm-hmm.
And you would think that, you know, Christmas, we listen to the music, it's a holly jolly time. But whenever you get behind kind of the surface of all of that, Christmas is actually a season where a lot of people are feeling a lot of things.
Absolutely.
And
Adam talked about that on the front end of the sermon,
right,
and just why, you know, why hope is so key is because we're coming into this season with despair a lot of times because we've lost a family member or there's a divorce on the brink or, you know, there's cancer that was just announced or something that is just ripping our lives apart. And so hope is so key.
Yeah, absolutely. So as all of those things, you know, the things that you just named as examples are things that people have said, this is how I need prayer. And just a reminder that hope was not something that stopped when Jesus first came, but hope is what we need to continue to do as we continually await for the Messiah. And so, man, just love some of those things. Those are just a couple of initial thoughts with that. Love the characters. And I think more often than not, we might not realize how relevant hope is for today.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Anna, she, like we were talking about, she's either 84 or has been a widow for 84 years. And one thing I really appreciated that Adam brought out is she did what she could. And for some of our people, maybe you are in a situation where you don't feel like you have the mobility anymore, or you don't have the skill set of other people. And I guess just take a play from Anna's book where she was limited, but she did an incredible thing, what she could. Like she was in the temple, she was worshiping, she was fasting, she was praying. And let's not overlook some of those types of things to, like you're doing, ask people, how can I pray for you?
Mm-hmm.
And then go do it. Because, you know, I've had a few texts lately as well, just pray for this, pray for that. And it's a good thing for sure.
Yeah.
Luke 2. Yeah. It's such a good chapter. And like you said, often we overlook that part at the end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even Simeon as a character is just an incredible character. I preached, I think this was the very first sermon, that I preached at Corinth, for the whole congregation.
Yeah. I remember that.
It was, New Year's Sunday, of the transition from 2019 to 2020. So I called the sermon 2020 Vision, not knowing what would hit a couple of months later.
That's right.
But it was about this text. And one of the things that I've always noticed and found significant about Simeon is what he says in his praise to God. Mm-hmm. He says, "Sovereign Lord, now let your servant die in peace as you have promised, because I have seen your salvation, which you have prepared for all people." And that entire sermon, I kind of played with that idea of seeing.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So you look into the Old Testament, especially in the prophets, a lot of what you'll notice is God has significant problems with the people of Israel because they have eyes, but they do not see. They aren't able to actually have this vision for what God is doing for not only their people, but for people all over the world. And so that's one of God's frustrations. And then the moment that Jesus hits the scene, someone is able to actually see the salvation of the Lord and recognize immediately that he's a light to reveal God to the nations. He's the glory of your people, Israel. And man, we just need to follow Simeon's example and make sure, man, we just need to put our eyes on Jesus and see him clearly. So his character too. I mean, both of these characters, like I said, love them. They're so overlooked mm-hmm. and underrated as a part of the Christmas story. Maybe we should put them, maybe we should have like a post-birth nativity scene. Like have like the temple set with Mary and Joseph and like a younger toddler Jesus or maybe something with Simeon and Anna, you know, praising and worshiping, because it's such a really, really cool story here.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. That really leads into just some of the practical stuff that was challenged yesterday. You're talking about Simeon seeing, because God really is always working. It's just, are we listening? Are we looking? Are we seeing? And Adam's first kind of practical challenge was just, we look forward in hope by looking backward.
Right.
And I think that's so key. So when we say that, what jumps into your mind, how we can do that practically? What have been some good habits that you have or you have heard that we can challenge our people with?
Yeah, I think the key word, and Adam said it, is just it's an active practice of remembering, mm-hmm. right? So looking forward by looking backward is not getting overwhelmed by the future without first looking backward and remembering. This is why God gave us communion, right?
Yeah, that's so what
every single week we are remembering God's faithfulness to us, what he has done, how he has saved us. And then that becomes the point in which we look forward and say, if God has been faithful before, then what makes me doubt that he'll be faithful again?
Right.
He will be. Mm-hmm. He will be. And so you always have to, just looking back literally just means remembering where in your life God has shown up. God has shown up time and time and time again in your life. Some are obvious, some less so obvious,
mm-hmm.
but nonetheless, when you take the time to look back and remember, God has been faithful in this situation and in this situation and in this situation. He's been faithful in situations that caused me more anxiety. He's been faithful in situations that caused more despair than the one I'm about to face. And so I'm okay. Like I'm going to be okay, because the Lord has got me.
One thing that really stuck out to me too was just God's faithfulness, God being faithful. Adam said, isn't something God does, it's who God is. Yeah,
it's his character.
Yeah. And so part of our looking backward, of course, is remembering what God has done. But even if there's maybe the list seems short to us for the things that God has done, he still has been true. Like he has been true to his character.
Yes.
He still is faithful and good. Whether we, you know, see items on a list or not. Some practical things I thought of too were just you know, we talk about this a lot if you've been around Corinth. So this is just a refresh a little bit, but the grateful for, just being grateful every single day for things is just a cool practice, an easy way to do that every single day. Another thing that popped into my head was just, I forget where Adam passed it on to me. He had heard it from somewhere, just, when you meet with God, or when a meeting with God has happened and there was something cool, like go back to that spot, mm-hmm. you know, and meet there again. And so
you really memorialize it, mm-hmm. right? You think about the stories of the Old Testament. First one that pops out to me is Israel crossing the Jordan River, mm-hmm. right? So the moment at which God is faithful to fulfill the promise to his people of entering the land.
Yep.
He says, okay, but before we actually go any further, I want you to take these stones out of a river and I want you to place them here as a memory for you and for your future generations that I was faithful, right?
Yeah.
And so that happens all over the Old Testament. When God fulfills a promise and he is faithful to do that, he says, okay, time out, hold on. Let's mm-hmm. let's like build something here or put something here as a reminder that this is what I did. And it's not for him, it's for mm-hmm. us. And right. so the same thing, just getting super practical here. The moment that the Lord does something faithful, do something to remember it. Like write it down. Like
write it down,
Adam was talking about.
Put a sign up in your house,
you know, all that sort of stuff. You know, maybe, I don't know, maybe this is controversial for, you know, whatever. Like some people tattoo, like mm-hmm. all that sort of stuff. Sure. What can you do to memorialize God's faithfulness to you so that it's an easy reminder whenever you're faced with something again?
Yeah.
God's going to be faithful because it's who he is and because it's what he's done before. I think that's key. How can you place that in front of you on a regular basis?
Yeah, and I think of just going back to the same spots, like the physical spots. So growing up, I went to a church camp called Maranatha Bible Camp, and that was back in Missouri. And I remember growing up, it was in high school, they did a challenge where once you were in high school and kind of older, they would send the students out for like 2 or 3 hours by themselves. So now it might not be that good of an idea with iPhones and things like that. Back then we didn't have anything. Like we had nothing except our Bible and our journal. And I remember a specific rock that I went and sat on. And so I remember 5, 10 years later, I was a college student or maybe even older, going back to that camp and actually walking back to the rock where I sat for 2 hours and just remembering what God had done in that moment. And so similar things here in Georgia. I remember earlier this year taking a hike literally at Stone Mountain, and I remember the spot. I can go back to it. But even if it's not something extravagant like a hike, what if you just sat in the same chair every day? And you kind of made it a point to like, this is where I'm going to meet with God. This is kind of a sacred space. It's the same recliner. It's the same spot by the window. It's the same cup of coffee at the same time. And you sort of memorialize that rhythm so we can look backward easier because our mind just goes into that habit loop of remembering God's goodness. So
I'll crack open the door and tell a real just personal story of right now what had just happened. I got a letter from our lovely IRS this last week, and it was the first letter in a long time that was actually really great news.
Okay.
And it had been an answer to something that was a process that started back in 2019. So
that's a minute. That's been a minute.
That's a long time. So send in a form in 2019 expecting, you know, a quick answer, a response. I learned that's not the way that works, you know. And so, you know, it's now 2022. And so for 3 years, just a bunch of question marks surrounding what is this going to end up looking like, you know, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But then in those 3 years to at times trust the Lord well, and to at times be frustrated by that whole process and worried about what might end up resulting, all that sort of stuff, finally get the letter in, and it's like an immediate relief. Oh,
yeah.
Lord is faithful. Uh-huh. He's going to take care of us when we honor him and all that sort of stuff. And so now I'm at a point in which that can become something that I'm journaling about.
Yeah.
God answered a prayer. You know, that can become mm-hmm. something that I can somehow memorialize. I'm probably not going to frame the letter. That'd be a little bit weird, but you know, like what, you know what I mean? Like we're at a season now, God answered a prayer. We want to do what we can to remember that so that we proactively have that to look at whenever we're faced with something again.
Yeah. And that really leads into point number two, Adam made, is just sort of embracing that season of waiting. So for 3 years, you know, you had to sort of embrace the wait, and very literally you did have to release control. It was out of, I mean, literally out of your hands. The letter, the piece of paper was not touching your hands. It was literally in the hands of someone else. And so talk about just your thoughts on that whole concept. Like, how do we embrace the weight? How do we practically do that? What are some practices we can do?
Speaking non in regards to what Adam said in sermon and speaking more for what I need with my personality, I cannot embrace the weight on my own.
Good.
I can't. Okay. I am not able to do that. I have to have a close community that I know is praying for me. I have to have my wife in the know who is going to call me out whenever I'm not trusting and who is going to encourage me whenever she notices that I am. I think that's the first thing that that sticks out. Whenever there is despair looming and you need to release control and enter into a season of intense, passionate hope, you can't do that on your own. You've got to have a community of people surrounding you. That's the first thing that pops into my mind with that question.
Yeah, I wrote that down too, actually, is just the phrase, it's personal but not private.
Yeah.
You know, it's your personal relationship with God. That's true. You can't deny that. You got to have your own faith. It cannot just be your parents' faith that you never, like, it has to be yours. But all throughout the scriptures, it's a community. And so, yeah, we need community that will help us both, like you said, encourage, but also maybe push and challenge and call up when that's needed.
Yeah.
So, I also think for me, one other thing I kind of wrote down here was to be present in the waiting is just to read other people's stories or encouragement that have gone through that. And so some Christian authors or resources, to help you embrace that weight. Like, I actually just looked up, there's a book called Every Moment Holy, and we've referenced that from stage
a time or two. Yeah, a few times. It's good.
Just a book full of prayers that have been pre-written. And so you can use them and make them your own. They're just really neat because they're kind of for modern day events like keeping of the bees or enjoying a cup of morning coffee.
Modern day prayers, keeping of the bees.
Well,
how many people do you know who's a beekeeper?
Hey, I just talked to somebody Monday night whose dad is a beekeeper.
Yeah?
Yeah.
There you go. So, I know a couple as well. My wife's grandfather and uncle
are
really into it. So
yeah.
I got to watch. This is not anywhere related to the point you're going, but it's so interesting. There was a beehive at Papa Owens's house.
Okay.
And I watched my wife's uncle Brian go out there and no suit on or anything. In the middle of swarming bees in a hive, I don't think he got stung.
Wow.
Like, he just is so natural. He knows exactly what he's doing. He went and got the thing with the queen on it, put it where it needed to be, and then they all kind of eventually followed the queen into the box. It was really cool to watch.
So have you enjoyed some of that honey?
From a distance, yes. Yes,
To eat the honeycomb? I like the honeycomb.
I have not eaten the honeycomb.
I like to eat the honeycomb.
But we do have some of the local Monroe honey. Well, I guess it would be Covington there, but I use it during allergy season.
But it's supposed to be good. Yeah, absolutely. So, keeping of the bees. It came from a book of
Every Moment Holy.
And one of them was actually a prayer. I shared it with somebody just this morning. It was a prayer written for waiting in line. So I thought that was kind of applicable to last week and last month, really, the Unhurried series. But the concept of waiting in regards to hope. And here was just part of it. I'll read this part of it too. It was a prayer, and this is like speaking to God, asking God, be present in my waiting, O Lord, that I might also be present in it as a Christ bearer to those around me who also wait. So it's just in the season of waiting, a prayer we can pray every day, Christ, be present to me so I can be your presence to other people who inevitably are waiting. Because like we talked about at the beginning, everybody at Christmas season, there's some happy memories, obviously.
Sure.
But probably everybody has something that is
weighing on them.
Weighing on them in some way.
Which is why I'll go ahead and say this. This is why my favorite Christmas song is O Come, O Come, Emmanuel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good one.
That song is so rich and deep and kind of puts you into the perspective of an entire nation that is in despair because of the captivity that they've experienced. God has promised he's going to do something, but he hasn't done it just yet because God's timing is different than our timing and always better. So you put yourself in those shoes where you're an entire nation crying out in despair, waiting and trusting and hoping, which are kind of synonymous words, waiting, trusting, hoping, not exactly, but similar. And all of a sudden, Emmanuel comes. And so the
which
prayer
means
and the
God
cry,
with us.
God with us. He is faithful. And so, man, that song, and in the moments that we kind of have those things weighing on us in the Christmas season, it is really, really cool to kind of slow down and remember, okay, what I really need, my Savior, he is coming. He is coming. He always shows up.
Which is really, you know, the season of Advent. That's
correct.
You know,
preparing yourself for the coming of
the Christ. Yeah. And so I think an important reminder for us is to remember, Jesus came and he's coming again.
Correct.
But he also shows up like today in our day-to-day life, his presence and peace and Holy Spirit like shows up on a daily basis. And so to call out for that, to cry out for that, even in what might, like, we would be tempted to despair, but even in that emotion to cry out, like, it puts us in good company is what I'm getting at with all sorts of people in the scriptures. And you think about Old Testament, they waited for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And so, crazy. So good stuff. Practically, we want to look forward by looking backward. And we want to release control or just embrace this weight. Before we jump into just a challenge, is there anything else from sermon you wanted to bring out? Was encouraging or challenging?
Yeah, I think just a lot of what we've been talking about. I am encouraged by the reminders that God has shown up. And just the thinking about that and what that looks like over my life. Anytime we get to have this conversation is a time in which I do my best to take that time to remember, to remember, to remember. And sometimes, like, if I'm intentional and purposeful about, like, creating space and margin in my day to actually slow down and think and remember what God has done, I'll recall things that I haven't ever recalled.
Absolutely.
Right? And so then that becomes even more in my arsenal of God's faithfulness that I can use to attack the moments that I might be in despair. So there's kind of that too. It's like kind of like this is a strategical thing where you're remembering and storing up those memories of God's faithfulness so that you've got them whenever you are faced with something really difficult. And I'm excited and grateful for this message because it is going to give me the opportunity to create that space to remember more things.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the challenge Adam gave was just to essentially do that. Just make a list of things God has done. You know, his verbiage was sort of like take a trip down memory lane. You know, and just remember. And what I love about the flexibility of that is you can be grateful for a good meal or a cup of coffee, and you can also be grateful for the presence of the Holy Spirit in your life.
Right.
Or your salvation that was grace through faith, you know?
Yep.
And so the spectrum is really just wide open. And I love just having the heart of a child where it's fun for us to pray with our kids at night. And, you know, sometimes they're really kind of deep and thoughtful and praying for someone at school that's struggling. Or other times, though, it's just, hey, thanks for Zeke, our dog, or thank you for hot chocolate that we drank today. You know, it's like, let's just have the heart of a child. So let's get practical once more. What challenge would you give as it pertains to the message? And I've got one if you're not ready yet.
You know, I got it. I would go back to what I said about how to release control and that if you are kind of approaching this Christmas season with a burden or something heavy and weighing on you, don't do it on your own. Talk to your closest community about that. Maybe that's a spouse. Maybe that's a parent, a mentor. Maybe it's a small group. Whatever it looks like for you, man, don't don't despair on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, bring people into the conversation. So that's a little bit less of a practical challenge than a take a down trip memory lane, but just as an encouragement and a reminder, you don't have to and you shouldn't despair on your own. You need people to call you up and call you out and pray for you and hold you accountable.
Yeah, my challenge is going to be for the dads out there, or maybe even, you know, a business leader, coach, something like that. It's really part of your job to be, I'm just going to use the term, a thermostat, you know, to set the temperature of gratitude.
Did you just give all dads permission to hog the thermostat?
Well, it kind of comes with the territory, at least the stereotype joke,
yeah,
right?
I'm just kidding. Yeah, I'm messing around.
Oh, man. No, to be the kind of the emotional thermostat, the gratitude thermostat. And so our nature as human beings is just to skew towards negative. Like, it's just so easy to find something negative rather than positive. So my specific challenge, I guess, for dads is just this season around the dinner table, let's just do it this week, where as a dad, you gather up your family and you do look back to something God has done in your life. And we just go around the table. Like, Thanksgiving is over, but really gratitude really can just transform our life every week.
Yep.
And so let's make it a habit to look back to God's faithfulness. I love the idea Jenny shared a couple of weeks back about the thankful tree, where you just kind of take clothespins and pin up pieces of paper. And maybe you tweak that idea, and or maybe you didn't do it, and that's fine. So you do it now. Do a thankful tree. And so every day, your kids or you and your spouse write something and you can see it. We talked about building that memorial, right? So you see the gratitude every single day. And what a cool thing to lead into Christmas, being thankful for what God has done.
Yeah. So, Love that. That's really good.
That's what I got. And so sermon was great.
We,
grateful to be in that sermon series.
We hope that you were blessed by that sermon and by this conversation today.
That's right. And we're not quite done. We're going to just talk about a little bit of Christmas trivia. So, Luke, I'm going to ask you some questions, and then we're going to get your opinions on some of these questions.
Buckle up. I've got them.
All right. First one out of the gate. Which popular Christmas beverage is also called milk punch?
I'm going to guess eggnog.
Eggnog. Yeah. Here's the hot take. Is it worth it? Do you like eggnog?
Eggnog is disgusting.
Eggnog is disgusting.
Disgusting.
What if you make a latte out of it?
No.
No. Not even that?
Get it away from me.
Wow.
This is the most ridiculous story in the whole world. I don't know why my best friend, roommate, best man, Dusty, his first Christmas that we, well, not his first Christmas, our first Christmas in a dorm room together at Ozark, he bought eggnog the moment that it was available, and he bought a baby bottle. And one of his favorite things
to drink eggnog
slow through a baby bottle as an adult male. That was weird. That was a little odd.
It's weird. And it shows how much you do love him as a friend
because
you're still his friend.
I'm still his friend. He stood next to me at the wedding. Yep.
Yeah. You know, I like eggnog in very small doses.
Yeah.
Very small.
It's a no. It's just so bad.
Hey, here's another question. In Home Alone, where are the McAllisters going on vacation when they leave Kevin?
Is it Paris?
It is Paris.
There you go.
Look at that. And so I love Home Alone. We watch that every year, Sasha and I do.
Yeah.
What's the best Christmas movie, do you think?
Ooh, best Christmas movie. That's a good question. I think there are lots that would make the list for me. I think my all-time favorite that I've probably watched more than anything else and laughed more is Elf with Will Ferrell.
Elf is a classic. We watch that every year, like the whole family.
Yeah, love that one.
So, yeah.
But also, like, I love It's a Wonderful Life. I love A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
Christmas Vacation's good and funny. There's a new one on Apple TV, and I would not recommend watching it with your kids. But it's Will Ferrell, Ryan Reynolds, and it's a movie called Spirited. It's a musical with Will Ferrell, so there you go.
Yeah.
So
you've named two Christmas movies now with Will Ferrell.
I do like Will Ferrell.
Yeah, so is he the best, you know, Christmas actor?
He's the best Christmas. I don't know about that.
No, he has some funny stuff. Some funny stuff.
So this is a fun fact about Christmas movies, and it goes into some trivia. So Ralphie from A Christmas Story actually plays one of the characters in the movie Elf.
Oh,
do you know which character it is?
No.
No? It is the character that is in the North Pole with Elf. And with Buddy, and it's the guy who's kind of like in charge of the toy shop area. So the guy who says, "No, Buddy, you're not a cotton-headed Ninny Wiggins." That is Ralphie.
That's Ralphie.
Yeah,
look at that.
Yep,
I learned something. So
it's fun.
I like Home Alone a lot too. Elf as well. I'm not in the camp that says Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
I mean, it's a good movie, and it ends on Christmas. So I don't know. I think this maybe it's a little bit too legalistic to not call it a Christmas movie.
There you go. All right. Hey, speaking of the movie Elf, do you know the first rule of the Code of Elves?
Ooh, the first rule. I know. I'm trying to think through.
Treat every
day like Christmas.
Like Christmas.
Yeah,
there you go.
Treat every day like Christmas.
In the song "Winter Wonderland," what do we call the snowman?
Winter Wonderland.
Parson,
yeah.
Parson Brown. There you go.
I wasn't going to get that one.
All right. The Christmas song. You know the Christmas song? The title of it is just The Christmas Song.
No.
Whose eyes are all aglow?
Whose eyes are all aglow?
All aglow in the Christmas,
song? I have no idea.
All right, so Luke, after this is we're done recording, is going to go look up the Christmas song
because he's
never listened to it.
And it'll be stuck in my head for 3 weeks.
Tiny tots.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, here's a math question.
Okay.
How many gifts in total were given in the 12 days of Christmas? So,
oh, wow.
You have to add them all up every time you go through it, though.
Yeah.
So it, like, compounds. It's a lot.
I'm not going to sit here and do this math because we are going to be here in awkward silence for about the next 30 minutes.
That's right. Here's the number.
Yeah.
364, if you add them every single time, is how many gifts.
That's too many.
And here's what I found out just yesterday, too. Do you know of all the gifts, if you bought them modern day, which would be the most expensive day?
I think the easiest answer, and I don't think it's the right answer, would be 5 golden rings.
It's not five golden rings. And I don't know who made these, like how much a golden ring would cost or whatever, but it's actually 7 swans.
7 swans
would be the most expensive. It's like $7,000 or something for
a
those.
A swan is $1,000.
It's crazy, right? It's absolutely crazy.
A swan is wow. There you go.
Hey, you grew up in San Antonio. How do you say Merry Christmas in Spanish?
Feliz Navidad.
So is that a good Christmas song?
Here's what I will say. It is a nostalgic Christmas song for me. I wouldn't necessarily call it a good Christmas song, but it does take me back to being downtown in San Antonio during the Christmas season and listening to all of the mariachi bands.
Yeah. Now that situation would be fun.
That is super
fun. When it repeats every single year, that's actually on my do not playlist.
Yeah, right there with simply having a wonderful Christmas
time.
Yeah,
and it's like, skip that one. Yeah. Let's not even
put
that
for
on.
For me, it's nostalgic, although I wouldn't say that it's good.
Speaking of nostalgia, what is the best-selling Christmas song ever?
All I Want for Christmas is You.
It's actually not.
Really?
It's very close, but of all time.
Last Christmas?
White Christmas by Bing Crosby.
White Christmas. I love that one. Hey, here's a shout-out to one of the Carnes kids, Ellie Carnes. I was triviaing a couple of students and asked, does anybody know who originally sang Last Christmas? So the song Last Christmas, I Gave You My Heart.
Yeah.
She goes, oh, it's Wham. I was like, how did you? I was not expecting any middle school student to know who Wham is or what that is. Like, shout out. Well done.
So did she get a prize?
No.
Oh, well.
She got the satisfaction of knowing.
Pat on your back.
Satisfaction of knowing she got it. She got a shout out on the podcast. There you go.
Well, we will do one more question and let it wrap up our conversation for today.
Unintended.
Tell me, where does this come from? Who wrote, Christmas doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas perhaps means a little bit more.
Oh, that is so familiar. Christmas, perhaps.
Maybe doesn't Christmas come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more.
Okay. I know that this isn't right, but my first thought went to like a Charlie Brown Christmas. But I don't think that's right.
It is a cartoon.
It's a cartoon.
Based off of the book from Dr. Seuss, How the Grinch
Stole. Oh, it's the Grinch.
Christmas.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That's a good one, too. We like to watch that.
The Grinch is fantastic. Both of them. Jim Carrey's Grinch and the cartoon Grinch kind of newer. But
and
Benedict
a third. So the original cartoon, but then Jim Carrey and then Benedict. There's three Grinch movies now. So, yeah, lots of fun. Hey, it's been a fun conversation, and we really do hope this Christmas season for you is very full, but not like in the calendar sense, but just full of, like we talked about today, hope. And we really do hope that you have hope. And remember, if you are going through something, let's reach out to the communities. Remember also, if something has been helpful or encouraging, we'd love to hear that. So let us know, man. Seriously, and thank you for being with us every single week. We're excited for this series for the next 4 weeks, even ending on Christmas Day as we kind of celebrate Christmas and have communion together at church. It's going to be good. And so we can't wait to see you next week for week two of the series, and then we'll be right back here in your car next week. Luke, any closing words?
I want to maybe shout out someone that the podcast doesn't know about. So we record, and then our amazing Jennifer Turner puts it together.
That's right.
It was a good conversation. We appreciate you guys.
Yeah. Love you lots. And we will see you next week.